Hope you're wearing your parachute pants, because this is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the DC film Wonder Woman 1984, or
WW 1984.
Something like that, yeah.
What would 84 do?
I don't know. I'm Jerry Bennett, though.
I'm Joel Bennett, and thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about the latest film. Like Jerry mentioned, we both watched it on HBO Max. We're going to spoil the heck out of it, talk about things we like, things we didn't like, connections to the DC universe as a whole, and hopefully entertain you along the way. That's our main focus, is to entertain you. So hopefully we succeed in that. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. We have not talked about it with each other. We've seen it a little while ago, but things got in the way, obviously the new year and everything. And we're now going to talk about it. And it's been talked about ad nauseum, so we're not going to try to repeat all the stuff that's out there, because that doesn't make any sense. But we're going to talk about, our personal thoughts and ideas, and hopefully shed some new light on things. What'd you think? Should we start there? Do we want to talk about any? There's no real DC news out there. It's just
this a lot is of stuff about coming,
but this we're just going to talk about the movie. So, I guess let's just jump right in. And
disappointing.
Jerry's going to tell us his review. That's going to be disappointing. I don't know why your review is disappointing.
151 minutes, and I was just utterly disappointed. Yeah, I realized that the trailers and that stuff showed like the cool stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why they showed those scenes. Oh my god, I was disappointed in this film. Didn't hate it. It's meh in a lot of ways, but I was disappointed in just how sloppy it was and how it was written for children and the children mentality. So if a child like this, okay, well then this works for the child, not the child in all of us. It was just, it's not childlike, it's childish. It was written for children. You?
Man, did I want to like this movie.
I wanted to love this
film. I've recently rewatched scenes from Wonder Woman again, the first one, and how awesome that movie is. That movie is awesome. Watching this, so I wanted to like it. And there are things I did like about it. And then there were things that it didn't do right, and I was like, that's okay, they can make it up for it here. And then there were things that were sloppy, but I was like, but upon like thinking about it and reading about it, I'm like, the answer, some of the questions that I think are sloppy, but it's not overt.
I was hoping you'd like it so that I could just point out all the questions.
I will definitely play devil's advocate, because there are some questions that I had to ask, and then as I thought about it more, I'm like, no, they answered those questions. But there are problems.
Lord.
There are other problems that I don't understand. For instance, one thing that is unforgivable for me is how bad some of the CGI is in this movie.
Don't even care about that.
I know you don't care about it, but like that's unforgivable in my opinion. Like you can't make a movie
nothing
that has
to do with this.
There was a moment in this, and I say CGI, I should also say visual effects. There was a moment in this. We watched it like four or five times, me and my wife. And it's the moment when she grabs the kids playing in the middle of the road who are just the worst kids ever.
That's a terrible scene, yeah.
But she grabs them, she flies through the air with them, and then she lands, and they clearly are mannequin dummies. Like the arms are sticking out like from their way, and it looks really, really bad.
Well, just when she grabs them, they don't look like they're there. Mm-hmm. Their heads don't pull back. It's just, ugh.
But like it reminded me of American Sniper when they used a fake baby, and it was clearly a fake baby.
There's a scene in the terrible mall sequence where one of the guys is lying on the ground, and for no reason, it looks like he's wrapped up because they clearly were supposed to have the magic lasso was supposed to be on him in the scene while she's holding the other guy up. And there's no lasso on him. So he's just kind of squirming on the ground for no reason. You look at it like, what is he doing?
But that being said, there are moments when when she flips over the vehicle.
The scene that they showed in the trailer.
That's amazing. It was awesome. The music kicks in there. Although the music didn't have the impact it did. If you guys go back and listen to our first podcast on Wonder Woman 80, the first Wonder Woman, I was raving about the music. And I'm not going to do that on this one because the music was fine, but like it didn't sound the same. It didn't sound as
the original trailer that came out way back when they used Blue Mondays, the song that it was a different take on it. I was like over the moon for this trailer. I'm like, the music, everything when it was put together was cut, I'm like, brilliant. I cannot believe how much I love that trailer. I loved it. and nothing.
The whole idea of this being in the 80s was so gimmick. You know, we're inundated now with things from the 80s. Like, that's what between Stranger Things and Captain Marvel.
Again, that's not the real problem with the movie.
I know it's not. But like, they don't utilize it. So anyways, so the CGI, I think, is unforgivable. I think there are things that you can forgive in this movie, and I think things that get answered. Like, for instance, the particle beam that he stands in at the end of the movie, like, that's projecting up like that. They made mention that it's part of Star Wars.
Should have been a blue light,
like,
going into a sky, maybe?
They make mention of this a little bit. You can kind of explain it away, like, mumbo jumbo scientifically, like gobbledygook. Like, this is a world where they've invented the particle beam, and you can see it, and that's what it's there for. Because when I was watching it the first time, I was like, what is this beam that he's standing at? I don't understand where it came from. It's just all of a sudden there. So you can explain away a lot of stuff.
Well, you can explain away because it's magic powers. It's magic powers and godlike stuff. And so magic exists. Magic can absolutely exist. And that covers everything. That's fine. That's Shazam.
Well, we know that gods. She probably was a god in the last movie. So
I'm okay with things of logic like that. It's just to be able to believe that this is how people react and this is how things are done. Don't follow any cohesion other than they're not real people. So then it's not a real scenario. So then I have no, you know, point of like, oh, I believe this because that person would really do that, or a normal person would do that. It's just stupid. It's stupid.
It really is stupid.
It's making me like Aquaman more.
Oh, I like Aquaman a lot. I think that movie that's world building. It is a beautiful look. Anyways, and this is not the Aquaman podcast. This is the WWE.
I just said, well, Aquaman, you kept going.
I know I did, because I liked Aquaman a lot. So, you know, this, we fall into some sequel tropes with this movie, right? We get multiple villains because...
Which is fine.
Which is fine when it's done right, but it's also, you know, a problem when it's not, when everything else falls apart. I can lean on that and go, why did you do that? You didn't need to do that. We have two villains in this. One of them's, you know, the quirky nerd who wants to be cool. It's a trope. It's been done.
But you need a villain that can be a physical threat. You have to have that in here. And Maxwell Lord, the way they created this character here, was not that. So you need to have somebody that they can punch and throw around, because that's what the character is based on. I'm going to beat you with physical violence. That's what most of these superhero films, which I love them, but they're based on, like, I'm going to, you know, physically, because I'm going to have to fight, defend, or attack. So you need that.
And I love that. That's why that's great to have. I mean, I wish she would have changed into a cheetah sooner, or, you know, at least gone that route sooner. But I had no problem with Kristen Wiig. I thought she was good. I had no problem with most of the acting in this.
When she wasn't basically playing Jamie Foxx from Electro from Amazing Spider-Man 2. We're like, oh, my briefcase. Oh, no. And no one's going to help me pick up my stuff. Oh, geez. Jeeper creepers.
I don't know why they're Jimmy Stewart out.
That's what they're doing. Oh, it's so tough.
Oh, Mary.
I know, exactly. You know. Because she's just, you know, she does that kind of character voices from the time period. I think it went on Saturday Night Live when she'll, like, oh, it's so wonderful.
But I didn't think she did a bad job in this. I think the whole, you know, she's ugly because she wears glasses.
We finally got a sequence where a superhero who used to have glasses doesn't need them anymore. They finally did that on screen.
Oh, it's good. I know. I haven't.
I wish they had done that, you know, like Spider-Man back in, or something. Yeah, 2001 with Spider-Man, which was already done.
But that being said, we are completely acceptable with Clark Kent wearing glasses to be Clark
Kent. What do you mean acceptable? I don't accept it.
You accept it. We all accept it.
I've always thought that was stupid. And I've read every Superman comic ever written.
Does Clark Kent, like, burn through his lenses? Is that what happens every time he... Or does he have to take his glasses off every time he uses his heat ray vision while he's Clark Kent?
So, about the
Wonder Woman 1984,
here we go. I'm going to talk a little bit about this as we go through, because we have to have a little bit of structure here. We can pick at it. We can talk about Easter eggs at some point. We can talk about the controversy at some point. Let's just go through some sequences here. So, Joel, we got a sequence on Themyscira, where the young Diana Prince, played by the young lady who played her in the first movie. She's adorable. She's wonderful in this. It's a goofy little sequence, but I'm fine with it.
Bad CGI.
You know, I mean, it's goofy. I'm fine with it. It's one of those ones where everybody, I never understood this.
It doesn't make
sense, though. Where you're having a giant, everything takes place in a coliseum, and then everybody leaves the coliseum. You know, like, they're in.
How do they see what's going on?
But I'm okay with that, even though it's stupid. I'm okay with that.
I still have a problem with it.
But then the storyline.
Hold on. within the context of the universe they've created, we've already found out that Wonder Woman's mom doesn't want her participating in these sort of things, doesn't want her to be violent, doesn't want her to be, yet she's allowing her to participate in this event. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Her mom's not against athleticism. She's not fighting anybody in this thing. She's being athletic. She's using accuracy with arrows. She's horseback riding. She's not fighting anybody. This is the Olympics.
Okay. I will shut up.
Yeah, but also then the whole thing is like, all right, she's doing fantastic and everything. Now this is the sequence we called It's All About the Horse. And, you know, it's like, well, hopefully the horse is good because it's not about her skills at this point. And that's fine. And they had this, you know, I'm okay with the opening, even though it was silly. I'm okay with it. And then we get...
Well, she learns her lesson, right? Like, that's the whole moral of the story is, you know, don't take shortcuts. Don't take a shortcut. You know, you should work hard to get where you need to go. And if you take a shortcut, you're cheating, basically. And that's what the whole overarching theme of this story is.
So after this sequence, we get the mall scene. The 80s, the mall. We can talk about the fact that tying into the bigger picture where they've established that Diana was supposedly not part of man's world for 100 years. And that can be interpreted different ways, as people have done that online, saying, well, it doesn't mean she was not involved, but she is involved. And she's in this mall sequence where they show her knocking out 3 cameras, even though they would still have video of something, but whatever, it's magic. You know, I think you could have even put a line of dialogue that at some point retroactively dealing with Batman versus Superman, where they said, you know, she hasn't been around since World War I. In fact, you could have had it at the end of this episode, some sort of magic, say, oh, everybody forgets about it and all track records of her is gone. So that they shouldn't have to worry about that, because she's running around and there's hundreds of people in the mall seeing her, but she looks to a little girl and says, shh. I'm like, okay, then no one's going to talk about her, which is fine. And you have a bumbling sequence where these guys, two guys go in, steal some stuff, including the, they steal stuff. And then when they go out, and then because one of the bumbling guys drops a gun, a woman goes, gun! And it's going crazy. And it's just this stupid sequence, which escalates to where the one guy's holding the girl over the edge. It's like, what? I was so early into the movie, I was going, What the hell's going on? This is stupid. Why?
It was very silly.
The motivation and the goofiness, it was so campy. It felt awkward. She can do, I mean, her, when she's flying around and doing stuff with the lasso, not all of it's perfect, but some of it's really good.
So it's campy in the sense that they're trying to make the 80s campy throughout this whole movie. So they're like, this is going to be the campy movie, the 80s movie and all that. And that works. The campiness, the funness works if that's what your basis is, like Shazam. It works with Shazam. But this does not work when we have Wonder Woman fighting in World War I and saving people and running through trenches and doing that. And now I get to see her. She's not silly. She's a serious, serious character. And that's what I think I love about her character, is that she doesn't have to, she doesn't, you know, play down to hokiness. And so you're right. This is what is going on here? Why is it campy? But I can understand what they're trying to do. And again, if they're trying to do something and I don't appreciate it, that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah. And obviously the big MacGuffin, even though it's not a MacGuffin, is the Dreamstone, which was created by the Duke of Deception or something. And it's weird, but I'm okay because it's magic. I'm not hung up on it, and I actually wouldn't even be worrying about it if the movie was solidly written around it. But once it's not solidly written, you're focusing on, okay, so the magic Dreamstone is causing this.
Wishstone.
No, Dreamstone.
Oh, it's a Dreamstone, but it grants wishes, which are your dreams, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
it does it once. You know, I mean, it does it twice.
Yeah, like I said,
it
does it. Exactly. What?
And if someone has
like,
did
that guy at the beginning who goes, I wish, you know, for a cup of coffee, like, I wonder what tragedy he had.
And the tragedy was the coffee burnt his mouth.
Okay.
And that's the whole, like, it was clever. Like,
yeah. Do you think at the end for it, he had to unwish it?
It's too hot. Well, that's
it. So, that's the whole thing. We'll talk about the end.
I want to talk about that because I do have thoughts on that.
Yeah. It's a mess at the end. We get the introduction of Barbara Minerva, who is Cheetah, and that's, you know, silly, but then she's going to be able to, like, have a friendship that they really have to rush with Wonder Woman, even though it's a 151-minute movie, and do you feel it when you're waiting for something to happen. Now you realize, at a certain point, you realize, okay, now I know where there was the two action sequences. air quote action at the front of the movie, because we're gonna have a long sequence of establishing
Diana. I'm okay with any of that.
We're establishing, the Mandalorian. Establishing Captain Kirk. All of them are established in here. Max Lord in the comics. Love this character. Always loved this character. He was actually with the Justice League in the late 80s. He was introduced. It was part of a comedy book, but he had some dark undertones, but eventually he gets revealed that he is a hero, and he was a hero for, well, almost two decades, until DC decided to make him a bad guy. He kills Blue Beetle. He's got these mind control powers, and eventually Wonder Woman literally has to break his neck and kill him, which happens on television, so everybody sees it. It's a really interesting storyline. I never liked what they did with the character. The character of obviously has been brought back because of comics, but this version, they did not know what they wanted to do with this version. Between I have this plan to make money and go this route, but at the same time I've got my son that's gonna be my out. And once you throw the kid in, it's like, but he loves his son, so like, I don't know where you're gonna go with this character. What are you gonna do with
it? He's doing the merchandise of the 80s, which is oil, and then when they do the Egypt thing, and I have no idea. The walls come up around it. He wants to be. That was when Kelsey and I were watching. We're like, wait, what? Wait, what's going on here? I don't understand. Like, this is his homeland, and he wants his people to be sovereign.
His land. It was the other guy. He went there for the oil. Yeah.
No, that's what I mean. Like, that the other guy, like, that's why that was his greatest dream, wish. There was a lot of convolution in there. But this comes down to, he wants to have all the oil in order. And first of all, I don't know how this...
It's B-I-A-L-Y-A. It's a fictional country.
I don't know how this guy found out about the Dream Stone. They never get into that. They never go like, he's been researching this his entire life.
That's a line of dialogue. It happens or it doesn't.
And he knows what to do when he gets the Dreamstone. Well,
we knew he was the one. We knew he was the one who was having it delivered back in.
Yeah, but we didn't know like how he found it. Like, how did he know what to wish for? Like, no, it's a problem because it's sloppy. It's very sloppy. Again, like you just said, we don't know exactly what his motivations are, because his motivation is to conquer the oil market and have 100% share of the oil market. But then his motivation switches because it's tearing him apart. He wants to get the health from everybody around to have immortality, I guess, or at least to live longer and not be suffering through pain. Yeah, there's a lot of like, it's very sloppy. And this goes into, why did he do this to begin with? Where did he learn about the Dreamstone? How did he know to make that wish? Is that the wish? Why did they say, we don't know how Rome fell? Like, yeah, we do. We have a really good, it's a long process, but we know how Rome fell. And
well, now you jump to a different thing.
Anyways, I'm jumping to other things.
Well,
I'm just saying,
I will say, though, that what you're talking about with him, one line of dialogue could have happened, and it could have been there like, I've been studying this for 20 years. Okay, that's all we needed to know. But it's regardless, it is sloppy. But it ain't the real problem here.
It's part of the problem. It's absolutely part of the problem.
Okay.
I think the sloppiness is the biggest problem.
Yeah, it's part of the childish writing, I guess. But it's also not childish in the fact that it's like, all right, well, they just didn't tell us that. But we had to make the assumption because he seems to be knowledgeable about it.
It's a plot device. We have to make the assumption that he read about it somewhere and has been researching in it while he's been trying to run his business and all that kind of stuff, and this is the answer. Okay. But yes, continue with.
I'm just saying, we find out that obviously you make a wish, you lose something. It's the monkey paw, which they've told us several times in this. Which everybody who heard that was doing the same thing I was. Oh, I remember that episode of The Simpsons. the Frogurt is cursed. We find out Barbara loses her humanity because we see her willing to feed homeless people until she's not willing to, because she's now got the Alpha Prime. And of course, she has the powers of Wonder Woman. And she'll get a second wish later, even though it's not supposed to be able to give second wishes. She gets a second wish to become, get a tail. Yeah, and then
an apex predator.
And then Wonder Woman basically wishes back her one love. And we do see some photographs earlier, which I'll talk about in the Easter egg section, where we actually see some of the characters from Wonder Woman, the first movie. We see very briefly, if you're paying attention, that there was photographs of these people, or at least one of them older. Which was nice.
Which would have been nice to have more of them in this.
Well, again, it's 70 years, so.
Yeah, they might be dead.
But we get Steve back, which again, he should have just appeared, and he's back. And instead, They do a weird thing where he gets to have this guy's body. Of course, the curse is she's losing her ability based on this. And meanwhile, did you see Soul yet?
I have not, no.
Okay, because there's a sequence, this reminded me of Soul, where all of a sudden Steve is in this guy's body. All she can do is see him. Now, one of the reasons I read online just moments before we did the podcast was the reason they based the guy who looked, the other look of the guy, was to look like Steve Trevor from the Wonder Woman TV series played by Lyle Wagner. And she did that on purpose. He kind of looked like that. Regardless, nice little thing, whatever. But the idea of another body opened this movie up to a huge, well, huge as far as, you know, it was over a day. Well, a controversy that is already over with. Nobody
cares.
Well,
no, it is. But is it because Patty Jenkins, the director, she just came out, I think, yesterday, and she compared this movie to Big.
Yeah, that's, she didn't answer it, though.
Yeah, she didn't. Like you understand, like, Big, it's still the same person. Now, yeah, Big gets creepy because he sleeps with her.
Yeah,
that's
the creepy, yeah.
And he's a 10-year-old,
she deflected
really,
it because she couldn't answer the question.
Of course,
because
they
so
didn't
she
think
doesn't
about
answer it.
They didn't think about it.
The thing, she didn't, when people called it, and which was funny, is the people who are calling this out, this is usually something that's called out from the left against the right. You know, this is like, hey, what about this person's rights over here? And instead, they're like, wait a minute, we're a leftist movie. We're women's rights. We're pro this and pro that. And they're kind of like taken back that, like, oh, no, Steve's in the body of somebody else. She sees him this way, but it's clearly some other guy. And now they're going to get it on. And this guy is basically, his body is getting used sexually throughout this movie. Now, if this was a woman's body, would that have even happened? Was it dismissed because it was just a man? I personally, I don't give a damn. I don't. It's like, okay, fine. It's a movie. It's magic, whatever. But I do love the fact that, you know, people are so mad with this movie that they called out and like, hey, wait, what about this? And then she can't. She has no defense against it. Tom Hanks, 1986. Remember he did a movie?
Yeah. No. I mean, I don't necessarily care if the right or the left this situation. I still think it is sloppy because you do question it and you go, but what happened to that guy's time? Like, he just lost out on a bunch of days of his life, let alone be having someone sleep with him without his consent. Like, wait, what? Like, it didn't make any sense. Why? Yeah, you didn't need to do that, because they magically make things appear in this movie. There are nuclear bombs that just magically appear. So why not just make him magically appear?
Exactly.
I mean, it was.
I heard
that
somebody was saying, so it could represent that when she lets go at the end, she sees him as it's a different
person.
But
here's the
person.
Thing: she wouldn't have let him go if she wasn't faced with the opportunity.
She was given no choice.
She was given no choice. If she had a choice, and
she could
have done both.
Her powers gone. Yeah,
she would have kept Steve around and screw that other guy and his family and his life.
Literally screw that other guy.
Yeah, right. She would have left that be, and that's why this is such a problem. Is because it's like, this is not something Wonder Woman, who we see as a beacon and
Joel,
a paragon.
Joel, she's a
of truth.
Monster.
This is not. I mean, people have tried to write it off, going, one of the powers she lost was her ability to tell good and bad, and like, and all okay. That. I'm like, trust me, Patty Jenkins and who the writers were, they did not think about that when they wrote this. They just wrote it,
and then they're like,
without any consequences.
They
thought
people
because
won't
they
care.
Did,
people will so be in love with this movie and in the world, and they're like, oh, you know what? And people aren't that much in love with the movie. Then all of a sudden your problems stand
and
out.
And this is, I mean, this is, they thought that because of Wonder Woman, the first one, they could do anything. They had script armor. They were like, we can do this because we are the ones who brought you Wonder Woman. And it turns out, like, hey, you're not infallible and you need to take your time with these things. You need to make sure you're doing it right.
So the story goes on. Max is, you know, the whole wishing thing is a little, it's just, you know, it's a sloppy, I mean, I'm afraid I'm just going to keep just you know, ripping this movie up, and I think
I'm gonna try to help.
Point.
I mean, I'm trying to like there is gobbledygook written in, like the idea that things get reversed once the main person. It's a vampire thing. If you kill the head vampire, all the other people become not vampires.
It's the Phantom Menace.
What's that?
It's the Phantom Menace. You blow up the control ship, and all the other robots shut down.
Yes. So I mean, they try to do that. Although
it's in Avengers too.
Doesn't make any sense either. But there was. Let's keep going through the movie, so we'll get to the end, and we'll talk about that.
Well, Max's powers take a toll on his body. He slowly deteriorates. He learns from the President of the United States. He's hopping around. There's a fight at the White House, which was fine.
Interesting that the President of the United States is not Ronald Reagan. I'm okay with it, but I was like, it was a little...
No, that pulls you out. This is a fantasy world. There's a country called Baelia, which is not even a real country, so you got to let that part go.
I know. I have to let it go. It was just a moment I thought we were going to see someone playing, you know, like Watchmen.
Yeah, because it reminds me of 1980 when I watched Superman 2, when that came out, it was, you know, Edward E. Marshall was playing the president. It wasn't Jimmy Carter, and I'm glad it wasn't. You don't want to date those movies like that. You know, oh, you know, it's...
Don't date the movie that's called WW84.
That's true. Okay, shut up. We get the sequence where they can jump back and forth across the country because they got the magic plane. That
which is fine.
Done by... Apparently, she can just wish things into magic. That was really stupid again. Just stupid. Like, I know how, I've been practicing on how to make things magical happen. Watch this. And the plane's invisible.
Make it invisible, which they never utilize later on in Justice League or Batman v Superman. Which
it could have been a Themyscira had a magic metal that she had a boat built out of.
I like the concept of it, though. If you're bringing that in, that's great. I don't like it flying through fireworks. I think that's
well.
Silly,
here's but, the other thing is you know, she's got a and I don't she's like got that an invisible
July,
plane.
It's all of a sudden July 4th. Like, she's why is a, everyone working?
Yeah, really she's sure. got an invisible plane, but then they pretty much in the comic books have said, oh, by the way, Wonder Woman can fly. So they're like, why do you got a plane for? You don't. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a holdover.
I also there's so many problems with the plane, though. Like, why she goes to the museum and the plane is ready to fly that's been sitting in the museum. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why is it fueled up already? I don't know.
Also, understand. When she lands it somewhere, what if another plane goes to land and can't see it? Just so they go back and forth across the country. We can see Maxwell's getting weirder. We get Cheetah's motivation to fight is to keep her powers. We get to our big ending. I'm jumping forward here, which is the wishing time.
On a side note, she learns to fly. Did she like? I was genuinely confused with this scene. I was like, is she falling at a steady rate and like she just keeps like going higher and then falling, or is she actually flying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. She's getting onto the lightning bolts to propel her forward.
That's fine. I'm okay with it.
It looks cool.
That's cool as hell. Like, that's fine by me. I just didn't know.
Again, she's the daughter of Zeus. So
yeah, I don't mind. Again, don't mind that kind of stuff. All fine. But I was like, is she actually flying? Because at one point she twirls the lasso to like speed her forward, and I was like, oh, she's not flying. She's propelling. And then I'm reading online, people are like, she's flying. I was like, she was.
Well, Thor was using his hammer until he didn't need to use his hammer anymore.
I don't know.
Right? Though Thor was not. He's not the god of lightning. He's the god of the god of thunder. So that's very similar in that respect. But we get to the big again. Here, I'm going to jump to the ending here. But we get to the ending where. The whole thing goes by her voice telling everybody to give up their wishes. Everybody give up your wishes. I just brought my mother back from the dead. Give it up. But, you know, I'm like...
The mother coming back from the dead would be a zombie. That's the whole monkey's
paw.
No,
Steve came back from the dead.
Then and taking over someone else's body, which she knows is wrong.
What if somebody had a wish, you know, saying... You know, I want this guy off the TV. Well, your wish is granted. But it's silly. I've already nitpicked enough. It's a mess here.
I will. So they do make the line that the vampire line. If you kill the head vampire, everyone else goes back to the same. But there are moments that just don't make sense. One of the key ones for me in this shot, they show a smokestack going in reverse. What? What
you sure
is
you weren't just rewinding?
No, I'm not rewinding. It's actually in the scene when everything's being wished back. It's a smokestack that goes in reverse. And I was like, what is that supposed to mean?
I wish that's no stack to come down.
Are we undoing world? I mean, are we trying to say that?
Apparently, there was no. Did you know there was no deaths in this movie? Apparently, even the woman who I wish you were dead, she never dies all the way.
Well, she comes back to life.
I guess.
So she definitely never died. It was the smokestacks going in reverse. It was one of my biggest problems with this
movie. I think
movie.
It's a sexual Why innuendo.
You, right? That's what it feels like. It could have been... Yeah. it's supposed to be a commentary on global warming and how, you know, we're all selfish and make our own dreams, but if we all work together, we can fix all these problems. Again, not a terrible idea. And the same with the whole metaphor for this movie. It's a fine idea. It's just sloppy.
As long as at the end he doesn't go to jail and he gets to stay with his son, everything will
be
fine.
You mean they find his son in the woods somewhere and he just walks out?
Well, at least we know what happened to Barbara at the end of the movie. Oh, no, we don't even know that. And did she undo her wish? I don't think she did.
Her wish was Trevor. Oh, you're talking about...
Cheetah. She didn't undo her wish.
Well, she doesn't have to because, again, I think everyone...
She was an apex predator who got zapped by electricity underwater, so she's not that big a predator because it didn't bother Wonder Woman at that point. Also, what did Wonder Woman's armor do for her at the end of the
Nothing.
Movie?
Nothing. She lost her wings, which, again, she doesn't need wings, but she lost the wings.
You look cool. In the comics, it's from the Kingdom Come comic book. And it's really cool.
It was forced in there. Yeah. They're like, this sounds like a cool idea. Let's do it. And then we get this... And this is bad CGI. That fight scene was I thought... didn't feel right. it felt so weird just swinging around on the electricity. Like, okay, sometimes it electrocutes them, sometimes it doesn't. I don't understand what's going on here. It was sloppy. It felt like the end of the first Wonder Woman, where it was just weird. I don't know. Damn movie, it's supposed to be good. It's supposed to be the thing that the DC holds on to, is that Wonder Woman's so good, but now it's not good.
Yeah. Well, we can talk next. We're going to talk about the Easter eggs. We could talk about the photographs, as I mentioned earlier, that are at Diana's apartment, where we see different time periods of the characters going forward, including when she's there with Etta Candy, who's an older woman. And obviously Diane is the exact same age. So Etta Candy was the character, the other woman, basically. And
I thought that was a nice little nod, because I liked her character in the first movie.
Yeah. There are comic book connections. Like I talked about Maxwell Lord. There was the Duke of Deception, which it was really interesting. They keep talking about this god who made the Dreamstone, but we never really spend any time. Like, there's no reveal. Like, obviously, last movie, Ares, the god of war, was the main villain. And this one, the Duke of Deception, was also known as Dolos to the ancient Greeks and Mendicus to the ancient Romans.
I thought the god of deception was Loki, so I don't know.
Well, that would be the Norse god, yes. That's the one that would make it a lot easier to pronounce, too.
You know, and when they talk about the god stuff, I want to see those movies. I don't know why. Like, that sounds like a fascinating movie to me. And I know they dealt with it with Ares, but, like, if they want to go the god route again,
every time,
I'm okay with that. It doesn't have to be every time, but I'm okay with that.
That's just it, though. They wanted to show the fact that, you know, one of her main villains, and it's also making the villain a female, is, you know, Cheetah. And Maxwell Lord has a connection with her in the last several, like I talked about, the comics recently. So they went that route. We also get to meet earlier in the movie, we met Stag, or Simon Stag, which was the investor in the Max Lord's Black Gold Cooperative, who was unhappy. He's basically a jerk businessman in the comics who's usually, his arch enemy is actually the hero Metamorpho that's always going up against him, and he's fought against the Justice League and everything. So that character, they didn't really utilize him for that way, but that's who he was. We talked about the country of Baelia, which is really close to Libya as far as the spelling. It's almost an anagram of that. But that's an imaginary country that's usually somewhere between Turkey and Syria in the DC universe. And it kind of covers the whole Middle Eastern area without actually calling out any one of the countries that are there, because they may be an ally or an enemy depending on the time the movie comes out. Again, we had the golden armor at the end, which was Asteria's armor. We get this backstory about who Asteria was, which was an Amazonian legend who did a bunch of fought men single-handedly, and they had her armor. Her armor was actually, like I said earlier, was from the 1996 miniseries Kingdom Come, which was phenomenal. It was not used the same way as it is used here. And any other ones?
Well, we didn't talk about Patty.
The end credit? Yeah, I'm getting there. Well, that's the character. That's basically the last one here is Asteria, when we get the mid-credit scene where we're seeing the back of a woman walking, and it turns out to be Asteria, and it also turns out to be somebody who literally found the Fountain of Youth in real life, because, oh my God, Linda Carter, who played Asteria here, for people who don't know, are you kidding me? She's obviously TV's Wonder Woman. She looks incredible. The woman is 96 years old. And she looks incredible.
She's 96.
96.
You know what? It's fine. People went gaga over this, and I was like, okay. I didn't grow up with Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. That's not, you know.
Exactly.
Do people go, when Lou Ferrigno showed up, are they like, oh my God, it's Lou Ferrigno? Like,
how old do you think she really is?
Probably 76, 77.
No, God, no. She's 69.
Well, then good for her. I mean, I had no idea, but like...
Her as the principal in Sky High.
Oh, yeah. We can review that movie if you want.
I don't want.
So, it's fine. I wish they... I don't know if they did it right or did it wrong by not showing her as Asteria during the cool sequences.
No, I think the one thing nobody's having a problem with is how they used her.
That's fair.
Whether they show, I mean, like, that's been like the one positive that's come from all of this.
I mean, there are things I liked. When she's in the White House doing her fighting sequences, I love that kind of stuff. It was very reminiscent. Well, they weren't fine because the CGI sucked in a lot of them. But that scene in the White House, very reminiscent of X-Men 2. And I was like, yeah, I like when superheroes use their powers in the White House.
I'm looking at articles actually really raving about the CGI. It's like, why the cheetah looked way better than the CGI in the Cats movie.
Did she have a butthole?
Exactly. Well, I mean, hey, Joel, everybody has a butthole. Cheetah is a humanoid feline character created through CGI for the big screen. However, Cheetah looks much better than any of the animals featured in Cats for numerous reasons. But
I thought the Steve Trevor, like, dealing with stuff like the escalator and things, like, it was cute.
Well, we've seen it, though. Well, it was done in, first up, we have seen it, but we also saw it in the last movie because she was the fish out of water and he was explaining everything to her. So this was symmetry. I'm okay with this where he's explaining.
I'm okay with it, too.
He's like, this is how an escalator works. That's a garbage can. I thought that was fun. I mean, I know we've ripped apart this movie, and deservedly so, but those parts were good. I thought there was a lot of again, I'm not even against wholesome. I'm not against a good time. I'm not good against camp, because camp can be done correctly. It just was poorly written. I kept going, you know, that's a lot of money, and I don't need it to be dark, but I need it to make sense. I need the characters to have logic. Even when magic's in there, you need to explain, like, people are being influenced magically so that they don't normally think the same way. I don't know. And every time we cut to the scenes that the streets are in chaos, every time for some reason I noticed, like, there's always smoke somewhere. There's a smoke, you know, because obviously in the film they go light a little smoke, so it has to, you know, we only have so many seconds to represent scenes in movies, so this needs to represent chaos. So there's smoke here, or there's papers blowing here. But then once I noticed it, it's like every scene there was smoke in every scene. Like, what's burning?
And it's also they didn't capture the scale. Like, I think,
because it wouldn't make sense. Because
the chaos that is it happening all, like, they didn't capture the scale.
But here's the thing: you show that much scale, you show too much, and you're like, well, clearly people are dying from this. And we don't want to have that concept, because then Maxwell Lord at the end can't get back with his son. He has to be put down or has to go to jail for the rest of his life.
I guess maybe that's why.
What law did he break? He broke Magic Law 743 of the Penal Code. I mean,
I guess maybe that's why, you know, they show the smokestack reversing, because everything goes back to normal. All the explosions of the car crashes and all that kind of stuff, those all reverse, right? Yeah. Everything reverses. Nothing. And do people have memories of what happened?
Did they do anything good within that time? Was there any consequences so that then the consequences got undone? Like, did Steve Trevor do anything when he was helping her that then gets undone so that what she was doing didn't get done? Like, did he launch a missile that she can throw through her magic glass a lot?
Well, for instance, I mean, also, like, so you have, you know, if people forgot, right? Did everyone forget? And because if people remember this, this is a, like, a milestone event in the history of human civilization, because this is a world event that happened, right? So people would remember this. This is something that would have happened. But if everyone forgot, does that mean Diana forgot? Like, because she was, you know, her wish was overridden by his wish to go back to normal or revoke his wish. Or is she close enough to him? Is there a distance? Does Barbara remember her wish? Or now she's, like, stuck in the middle of nowhere going, how did I get here? What's going on? Like, who remembers? Who doesn't? Why do things go in reverse? Are all the buildings and things that exploded, and are they all back to normal? There are so many questions here. And I think a smart writer might be able to write a couple quick lines of dialogue to get out of it, but it doesn't mesh in the DC cinematic universe.
It feels like people are going, people won't think about it. People won't worry about it. People will cover it. And that doesn't hold true. Here's my question to you. Go back, Batman versus Batman 5, Superman 12, whatever it was called. In that film, they established that Diana Prince, you know, Wonder Woman, has been around. She's immortal. And they said, but we haven't seen her since World War I. So you think when they wrote that dialogue, put that in there, and they were looking big picture, like going, listen, we know we're doing a movie with her in that time period, so it's okay to do that. And then if we do a sequel to that film, did they even think that through? Did they think, well, the sequel then take place modern day after this movie, so we won't have to worry about it? Did they even inkling
think about this?
The consequences of her, like, after she does the Wonder Woman movie, their character sits, you know, unheroic for 100 years, versus she, you know, they established that she was doing stuff and hidden in the shadows, although she's not Batman. She's designed to stand out in the
color. She has a costume, yes. Crying out loud. You know, you're right. I mean, I think this was not planned out right, and I think this is post Zack Snyder, you know, his vision,
yes,
which we're going back to. So I think there was, it's, they wanted to make a sequel to Wonder Woman because it was so successful, and they rushed this to get this out, and it doesn't make sense into everything they've created. Like, just like DC has done from the beginning, they rush these things to get them out. They rush Justice League to get it out to be Marvel, and it doesn't work because they haven't established the characters before they put them together in teams. But that, and they're always trying to catch up. So for instance, right, you get Man of Steel, which I love Man of Steel, and one of the big things that came out of it was all the destruction that was caused. Like, they caused so much destruction in that movie, but they never reference it, and that was one of the big beefs. Or, you know, if rightfully so or not, it was one of the big beefs.
So in
Batman v Superman, we get to see some of the fallout from that, from Bruce Wayne's.
So they're constantly chasing after the mistakes they make.
Exactly. So I think the next movie, whatever they're going to do, they're going to have to chase through the mistakes that they made in this movie, because it's not well planned out. This is the Star Wars ran into this problem too.
We call this the Rian Johnson.
The MCU at least has a someone who's overseeing this and can keep a solid structure going through, and they're not adapting based on a failed movie. So I think the next DC movies, we're going to see them dealing with the fallout of this and trying to make it work.
All right, before I want to end this with talking about some positives from this, but before we go to positives, Joel, where is this one in line with Suicide Squad, which you did not
this
like?
Is better than Suicide Squad.
I would totally disagree with that statement. And Suicide Squad is a mess. Although I'd like to see the other cut that they're talking about for this one, but
yeah, I think this is more on the lines of. I think it's better than Suicide Squad, but I think it's more along the lines of Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Or
some people rave about that one.
I mean, that's a good movie. It's a solid movie, but that's where I place this one. It's very much in that vein.
Is Man of Steel better?
Yeah.
Is Justice League better?
Yeah.
The existing Justice League.
Yeah.
Interesting. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Shazam.
Oh, Shazam's much better.
Yes.
Shazam doesn't get the credit it deserves. I think Aquaman's better. Wonder Woman is still the pinnacle of all this. And I think that maybe that's one of the reasons this is not as good, is because for some reason they set the bar so high with Wonder Woman, the first one, that this just doesn't.
I love looking at when this comes out, they try to rank all the films, and these people do rankings. They also put Joker in there. I'm like, well, geez, why don't you do Batman and Batman and Robin in there too? Well, Joker's kind of part. Get out of here. Get the hell out of here. All right, and also this film has made box office, which doesn't matter anymore, $118.2 million.
But it was worldwide. Like the most watched movie thing of the year.
But no, well, not of the year, because Bad Boys for Life did more, but people don't want to talk. It's like, I'm an ad during COVID. So that whole mess up.
What do you mean?
Bad Boys for Life made more money than this.
No, I'm talking about, I was saying the most streamed movie, I believe, of the year or something that was this one. I mean, I think it beat out Hamilton. But I don't know how they got those numbers.
No, God, no. The number of people, get out of here. That doesn't even come close, because HBO Max doesn't have that many subscribers versus what Disney has. It's impossible. Impossible.
Well, we don't know that.
I know.
Do we know that? Do we know that HBO Max has less subscribers than Disney?
Yes, we do know that.
Because Disney and HBO both released their subscribership numbers?
Exactly. They call me and we talk on the weekends. It's incredible. So positives coming out of this movie. I will say the positive is Gal Gadot is an incredible actress as Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And I think the charm of Chris Pine as Steve Trevor is always there. Wonderful. And I thought Kristen Wiig was fine. I did not have a problem with her look at all.
I thought she was funny, too, at moments.
And I liked the fights, some of the fights.
Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff was good. Some of the stuff was silly.
Yeah. Everything else is making me go negative. I got to stop.
I think the inexcusable part is the CGI, especially since I sat on this movie for so long. Like, they could have been working on the CGI to make it better. There's some bad CGI.
Yeah, and I think
movie.
You see it more than I do, because I was so much focused on the story being
so bad.
I wanted to end positive, and you kept.
I'm sorry.
You're going negative.
I'm going negative.
Keep doing it.
I'm going to say the positive that most people say, that I think Gal Gadot and Chris Pine's chemistry together is pretty fantastic.
How will they pull them together for a third film?
I can guarantee you he's not going to appear in someone else's body. I like when they talk about where was he? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, technically he was in two bodies in this movie.
Oh my God.
On that positive note, yes, I did. All right. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed this negative review of Wonder Woman 84. If you like us, please join us on patreon.com/Bender Brothers Podcast and become a patron. We just put up another exclusive on there regarding all of the films of David Warner, the classic character actor. And we have more coming as the year goes on. It's a way of showing us that you care about the podcast, and it helps us out and helps us keep doing this. We will have another podcast following this up, finally going to review the New Mutants movie. And then after that, it's all about WandaVision. So thank you for listening with us, or listening to us, talking with us, experiencing with us. Thank you, guys. I'm Jerry.
I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.